the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida. It's the Annie Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 22nd, 2011, and you're listening to the Ante Up PokerCast, the finest podcast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. And wow, what a little different show we have today, Chris.
Yeah, you may have noticed that it was pretty quiet in the beginning of the show here. It wasn't wasn't a lot of stuff beforehand, just getting right into it.
All right, well, it's going to be a little different show here, and we'll set it up here. As most people probably heard, poker players have taken to calling Friday, April 15th, Black Friday.
Yep.
And for good reason, the Department of Justice and the FBI unsealed an indictment charging the three largest poker sites serving the U.S. market, PokerStars, Full Tilt, and UB Absolute, their top executives and a handful of other people related to the sites, with counts ranging from running an illegal gambling business to bank fraud. The department immediately seized the .com domains of those sites very soon after the sites froze out U.S. players from playing for money or accessing their accounts. In a matter of hours, the industry that reportedly takes in billions of wagers a year was devastated, the effects of which continue to mount 1 week later and will surely continue for months or years to come.
So we're going to devote the entire show this week to what happened and what it means. We have a few special guests lined up to help us make sense of it. Next week we plan to be back to our normal, same bat time, same bat channel thing. Hotline and mailbag and hand of the week, which will probably be a brick and mortar hand unless we get it sent from international waters or whatever. But, we'll be back to our normal selves next week.
Yeah, we're trying to laugh as much as we can. It's not easy, right?
No, it sucks.
First and foremost, we do want to let all of our listeners know and everybody who contacted us with concerns about how this would affect Ante Up that we truly, truly appreciate how much you care about us and the show and the magazine and everything we're doing. Obviously, it's been a difficult week for all of us, and knowing that Ante Up was among the first things many of our fans thought of, I know, really helped me make it through this week.
Yeah, absolutely. But we need to let the Ante Up Nation know that, while we took a financial hit, obviously, with this news, to borrow from Monty Python was merely a flesh wound for us.
We're not dead yet!
Not dead yet! We've built our business around everyday players and poker rooms that they play in, so we're well diversified, and we can weather the loss of online advertisers basically because we didn't really have that many. Obviously, as you noticed at the beginning of the show, PokerStars has regrettably had to suspend their sponsorship of the show, but the PokerCast will continue on just as it has every single week since we started about 6 years ago. So, you know what? We're not dead yet.
We're just as reliable as the Postal Service. Rain, sleet, snow, government overhandedness. We survive it all here. but unfortunately, we will be forced to suspend indefinitely Apes, our great online poker series. At some point in the future, we can bring it back. We absolutely definitely will want to. But otherwise, readers and listeners should be able to enjoy the Ante Up experience just as they always have. Nothing has really changed other than a little few coins in our pocket. But other than that, we're all right.
Yeah.
Strong.
Going to have to push everybody just to start playing live, get us some hands of the week from their actual card rooms because it's not going to be as easy as sending us hand histories anymore.
Yeah, and boy, I'm going to have to you know how bad I mangle the hands when their hand histories and typed out. So we'll have to put the seatbelts on here and buckle in for some hilarious hands of the week coming up in the future, I'm sure.
The guy had it looked like 50 chips in front of him. I don't really know how, and I it may have been a 6 on the board, but it might have been a 9. I couldn't tell where I was sitting from, but I pushed all in.
Suits weren't important. Ranks weren't important.
I was basically playing the player, not the card. So don't even worry about what was on the flop. Now, what should I have done?
Oh, again, I'm glad we're laughing. I'm glad we're laughing. All right. Well, we got, like I said, a great show coming up. We got two great guests lined up here. First, Larry Walters, great internet gambling attorney. He's got some great insight for us, and then we'll follow up with John Lanier, our Antiup online columnist, and then we got some stuff that we just need to chat about ourselves. But this will be our dedicated Black Friday show, and then next week we'll get back to normalcy, right?
Absolutely. So we had that interview with Larry yesterday, so I'll use that little swishy sound so people don't get confused and think we're talking to him live. So here's our interview with Larry Walters.
Lawrence Walters is managing partner of the Walters Law Group, a boutique firm near Orlando that specializes in myriad online issues, including internet gaming. You can visit his website at www.gameattorneys.com. Listeners who have been with Antiup since 2006 may remember him joining us soon after the UIGA was passed, then to help us make sense of that law. And today joins us again to give us his views on what we're calling Black Friday. Larry, we know you're at a conference out of the country, so we very much appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here. I know these are important issues, so I am honored to be able to give you my point of view on them.
Excellent. We appreciate it. When you joined us last time, I remember you saying that something to the effect that internet poker as we know it was gone at that point. Obviously, as we know now, it took a few months, but the internet poker sites found a way, workarounds around the UIGA, and it had been largely business as usual until Friday. But is it safe to say now that Friday's actions are far more serious of a threat to online poker than the UIGA was?
Well, the UIGEA, when it was passed, was merely just a threat of enforcement. In other words, it provided the Department of Justice with the tools to be able to go after the online poker industry. But Friday's developments show that the DOJ is finally interested in actually pursuing some of these operators for gambling violations and now actually enforcing the UIGEA. I mean, oddly enough, the UIGEA, since it was passed in 2006, has not been enforced against an online poker establishment. So it's taken quite some time for the government to put together a case, but now I guess they're ready to test the law and to test its applicability to online poker.
Oh, Scott mentioned that you're at a gaming conference this week, and you're there right now. What's the consensus from the attendees there? I mean, you have all these people who are affected by it or know about it. What do they think of all this and what it means?
There's a wide variety of opinions, and there's not really a consensus, but I can tell you that it is the talk of the town, obviously. Everybody wants to know what the implications are, what the basis for the charges are, how likely it is that the government will be successful. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation about the impacts of the charges themselves. Will it open an opportunity for other gaming establishments to fill the void that will likely be left by these major operators? Anytime you have somebody, you know, pulling out of the industry, it opens a window of opportunity for others who are willing to take a risk and perhaps try to fly under the radar to fill the void. So, you know, there's a lot of speculation about who might do that, what the impact will be, and, you know, what the overall consequences will be to the act of seizing domain names at the registry level. And this is a very important point. Until now, we have not seen the government actually go and seize .com domain names at the registry level. We've been involved in some litigation in the state of Kentucky, where the state sought to seize 141 domain names for violating Kentucky state law relating to use of gambling devices. But in that case, the state pursued the individual registrars where the domain names were registered, and a lot of them were overseas, and they simply said, look, you don't have jurisdiction over us, we're not going to comply with any Kentucky court orders, and the operators were fairly well protected by their overseas registrar location. Here, the U.S. government, I guess, got smart or finally figured out that they don't need to mess with the registrars and double-jumped right to the registry and was able to seize the domain names at the registry level.
Yeah, that's a great point. We were going to bring that up a little later. The domains were part of the shocking part of this. Now, PokerStars and Full Tilt have shut off access to U.S. players, but as you mentioned, there's still several online poker sites serving U.S. players and even being so bold as to market to them right now. Do you think action is likely to be taken against those sites in the future, and should players be concerned about playing on them now?
The players have always faced a risk of potential seizure of their funds or interruption in the flow of the money that's kind of a cost of doing business that everybody has to realize if they're in the United States and placing bets with an online gambling establishment. You know, the U.S. says online gambling is illegal. Whether it is or it isn't is something that the courts are going to decide, possibly in this case, possibly in future cases. But there's always a risk of the funds being seized. And as far as other sites being prosecuted, that's a possibility. We are aware that there are likely several other investigations going on at present. We know that there are several unrelated or possibly related investigations of payment processors that are occurring at the federal level, and some of those may involve other online gaming sites, other online poker sites or sports betting sites. So everybody's kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop and to see who else is going to be prosecuted. And I would not be at all surprised to learn that there are others, other big names, possibly small names, that are going to be the subject of the same kind of seizure and prosecution.
Well, you know, obviously our listeners are worried whether they're going to actually be facing any legal problems if they've played on these sites for money or deposited money. You know, even some of our forum posts have been talking about, oh, the government's going to keep track of all the people who withdraw money and then follow that up with their taxes. I mean, obviously, they don't have the manpower to follow the millions of players in the United States, but do you think they have anything to worry about?
I can tell you from a practical standpoint that it's unlikely that the players have anything to worry about. Certainly, there are theories under which the players could be prosecuted, you know, conspiracy, aiding and abetting, and some of these accomplice liability statutes would allow the government to pursue the players as facilitators of online gambling or something like that. But as a practical matter, the government has bigger fish to fry. They're not interested in pursuing somebody in their basement, you know, making $10 bets on poker hands. That's not what the federal statutes were designed to do. And over the years, we've seen commentary by Department of Justice agents, FBI agents, to that same extent, saying we're not interested in pursuing individual players. Now, you know, everybody has to evaluate their own particular position, and players are well cautioned to get their own independent legal advice. There may be states in which gambling activity is prohibited at the state level. And there may be instances where players are not simply playing as casual bettors, but are in fact engaged in professional betting activities, which could trigger liability under different theories than we're discussing here. So it's good to be cautious, but for the average player, I don't think there's a whole lot to worry about.
That's good news.
I'm curious as to whether you think that the Justice Department went after the big three first on purpose, or whether you thought you think maybe they had a stronger case there. I mean, obviously, if they would have gone after some of the smaller sites, it might have given Stars and Tilt some room to maneuver. Is that a correct assessment, do you think?
All those are valid points. You know, there's a certain enjoyment that the government gets from the shock and awe of taking down larger players. But it's also important to remember that that law enforcement is itself a business of sorts. And the Department of Justice is interested in making money, or at least covering its prosecution costs, by seizure of money in these white-collar criminal cases. These cases are expensive to investigate and to pursue, and the government likes to get money in the end and be able to pay for the prosecution, if not, you know, put a few dollars in their pocket themselves. So while they could have gone after some smaller site, perhaps, if they were involved in similar activity, the fact that there were millions, if not billions, of dollars trading hands with these larger sites, that caught the attention of law enforcement, and it made the case more sexy and more profitable, frankly, for the government to pursue.
From a legal standpoint here, I kind of want to pick your brain on what your thoughts on the actual specific indictments here. One of the charges alleges operation of an illegal gambling business, and I think this is one that has people most confused. You referenced it a little bit, because it doesn't seem that there's any law that specifically speaks to this. Are we wrong, or is the government pushing a very small edge on this particular indictment?
I can tell you that there are going to be some defenses to this indictment. This is not a slam dunk on these counts for the federal government. You know, they made a big splash and a big show with seizing the domain names and filing the paperwork, but you know, that's when the real work starts. now they've got to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt, and they have to justify all of these charges and explain to a federal judge if they've gone too far. I can tell you that there is no federal law that prohibits online poker. And so therefore, the government is very careful in dancing around this issue in the indictment. They don't specifically cite a federal law that prohibits online poker activities. Instead, they rely on this illegal gambling business statute and the UIGEA, both of which require that some separate independent law prohibit the gambling activity at issue. So federal law doesn't prohibit online poker. So what they have to do is they have to rely on state law. And both the UIGEA and the Illegal Gambling Business Act, Section 1955, are what I call pass-through laws. They allow state law to form the basis for a federal violation. But here what we're talking about, amazingly, is holding a foreign legal and licensed online poker operator in another country that's operating consistent with the laws of its host jurisdiction, holding that entity responsible for a misdemeanor New York gambling statute that has nothing to do with online gambling. The New York state laws that are referenced as the basis for making online poker illegal talk about prohibiting gambling in general and the promotion of gambling in general. These are misdemeanor statutes. They do not relate to online gambling. New York is not one of the states that passed an online gambling prohibition like a number of other states have. And so this indictment, at least a large part of it, may stand or fall based on the ability of the United States government to hold a foreign operator responsible for compliance with a New York misdemeanor gambling statute. There's going to be problems there. You know, your listeners are probably saying, how could this possibly happen? And, you know, their instincts are right. Generally, the confines of the state limit the jurisdiction of state law. So, you know, the New York is generally not allowed to apply its law to people in Ohio or Utah. There are circumstances where it's possible, but it's limited. But more than that, when you're talking about interstate commerce like this or international commerce, there's a little something called the Commerce Clause in the Constitution. And I've written quite a bit about this on my website and for various gambling outlets. And the Commerce Clause requires that if you're going to regulate international commerce, it has to be at the federal level, not the state level. The states are powerless to try to impose state law on interstate or international commerce. The reason for that is obvious when you think about it. You can't have the airlines or the train system comply with 50 different inconsistent state laws in operating a international business enterprise. And this all came about, interestingly enough, from the width of railroad tracks in the old days when they were laying railroad tracks throughout the United States. And ultimately, the government said, look, you can't change the size of the railroad tracks by state law. It has to be uniform throughout the United States. And thus, the Commerce Clause was born. And this has been a very well-established principle of law. And there have been a number of states that have tried to regulate the Internet and impose state regulation on Internet activity. All of those laws have been struck down on Commerce Clause grounds. And this is, you know, technical legal stuff. But at the end of the day, it could be incredibly important in this case because trying to hold this foreign defendant responsible for some state's law could very well violate the Commerce Clause.
Wow, that's some amazing stuff. You know, it sounds like to the layman, and by layman I mean me because I'm not very smart, but it sounds like the indictments that are alleging bank fraud and money laundering are like the most damning. Those seem to be the ones that could stick if they're proved true. Is that a fair assessment? And can you also tell us what constitutes bank fraud in a sense that does someone need to actually be damaged financially for it to be bank fraud, that kind of thing?
Those are all, you know, extremely insightful questions, and you're really cutting to the chase of what this is all about. In my view, this case stands or falls based on the bank fraud and misrepresentation allegations. The gambling counts and the wire money laundering counts, they're all dependent on whether or not online poker is illegal. And that's really an open question, very debatable, very dubious. But when you start talking about misrepresentation, lying to banks, misrepresenting the source of banking transactions, you know, you start getting into federal banking regulations, and you know there is potential problems there. We don't know if any of these allegations are true. They're so far just allegations. But to the extent that there is any meat on the bone with these allegations, then that could form a potential problem for the defendants if they're misrepresenting banks as to the nature of transactions. The federal banking fraud laws are fairly broad. But, you know, you look at these things, and if you're talking blackmail, let's say online poker is ultimately legal and you can't use the state law to prohibit it, then what they're really accused of doing is calling these transactions one legal activity instead of another. So it would be tantamount to telling the bank, I'm really selling golf balls when I was selling jewelry. Well, so what? If they're both legal transactions, you know, where's the damage, as you point out? Who's the victim? How was anybody hurt by this? And, you know, so there could be issues that are kind of intertwined with the legality of the underlying gambling activity, even with the bank fraud counts, and certainly with the money laundering counts. You know, they talk about disguising the nature or identity of the gambling transactions as a basis for money laundering. Well, if the underlying gambling activity is not illegal, the money laundering counts don't stick, because you have to have, in addition to disguising the nature of the transaction, some underlying illegal activity.
Yes.
So a lot is going to depend on whether or not internet gambling in the form of online poker is actually illegal, and whether these state statutes can be applied in such a way so as to justify a violation of federal law.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, there's a shot here that if the defendants can be persuasive in their argument that they weren't operating a gambling business illegally, that these other charges just can't be applicable to it. Is that correct?
Well, there certainly is a shot. And now we have to talk about, you know, the practical likelihood of any of this happening. One important statistic to remember is that 98% of all criminal cases are resolved informally by way of a plea, as opposed mm-hmm. to going to trial and getting a decision on the merits. And, you know, the criminal defense lawyer in me, my instincts tell me that there's probably going to be some kind of plea to the non-gambling offenses, like the bank fraud counts, whereby the government would say, look, we got you on bank fraud, let's say, and in order for us to give you a deal on this, you're going to have to plead guilty to the gambling charges. And then they can wave around that guilty plea as precedent and scare everybody else out and say, see, we got these big poker sites for gambling violations, so you better stay out of the United States too. We've seen the Department of Justice do this in other circumstances, where they will include a bunch of counts in an indictment, some of which they can prove, some of which they wish they could prove, and they ultimately get a plea to the counts that they wish they could prove in exchange for dropping the ones that they actually can prove. It's a bit of a game, but here there's some significant political implications to getting a guilty plea to the gambling offenses, because then they could try to claim that, look, we got these guys on gambling, and so everybody else better stay out of the United States.
Wow. Now, what do you think would happen? I imagine a case like this is going to take a while to get to court, if it even goes that far, or to a settlement. People are thinking that maybe this is kind of the kick in the rear that needs to happen to get some kind of federal regulation of online poker. In the unlikely case that something like that would happen, if the government endorses online poker before this gets to that point, does that help the case at all, or is it because everything happened before that, it would be irrelevant to it?
As far as the liability of these defendants for violating these, or allegedly violating these statutes, any legalization would have no impact. But what could very well likely be happening here, and this is, you know, wild speculation by Lawrence Walters, but it's certainly possible that the government is trying to clear out the way for legalization, you know, get rid of the people who are occupying the market space and clear out the opportunities so that we can legalize the activity and let our hand-picked licensees take over. We've seen this kind of thing happen in other instances, and it's certainly nice to get rid of all your competition through criminal charges so that once you legalize the activity, you have a nice open target market to approach.
All right, Lawrence, we appreciate you taking some time. Very insightful comments you had. I guess my final question is, if you had to put odds on whether this is actually going to be settled in a negative format or make it to court, are those odds long or short, or where do you think it's going to happen?
Well, number one, I would be surprised, frankly, if all of these non-resident defendants actually show up and agree to fight these cases on the merits. I mean, you have to wonder what the incentive is for somebody who is in a jurisdiction that may very well not extradite to come forward and face the wrath of the U.S. government. And if they did, you know, there would likely need to be some kind of agreement pending trial on pretrial release where that defendant would have to agree not to operate an online gambling establishment, not to continue allegedly violating U.S. law. And I can't imagine, you know, the incentive for one of these operators to come forward and agree to shut down their operations and subject themselves to the United States criminal process. Now, you know, there's some agreements in place that we saw today where users are allowed to access the site and get their money back. So there may be a deal already in the works, or the makings of a deal in the works. This is a very fluid situation, but I think that the odds of obtaining a decision on the merits as to whether online gambling is legal or illegal through this case are slim, and that this case is much more likely to be resolved either by way of a default judgment where nobody shows up and they just get a conviction in absentia, or a plea where there is no finding of liability on the merits, but somebody pleads no contest or guilty in exchange for some sort of reduced sentence.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Again, it's Lawrence Walters of the Walters Law Group. You can read more of his writings at www.gameattorneys.com. Thank you again, Lawrence, and enjoy the rest of your conference there, and we appreciate your time tonight.
Nice to be here. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Larry.
A fascinating interview, Chris, I thought.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And a rosier interview than I was anticipating. I mean, I'm not saying that it's one man's opinion, it's our opinions, whatever, but, you know, it sounds like there's still a possibility of this kind of going away. Not going away, but you know what I mean? Like, it just...
Yeah, or at least being resolved.
Resolved.
More positively than we probably thought in the past. I mean, obviously, none of us know exactly what's going to happen, but right. But those are very good points that came up, and it's stuff that I haven't seen or heard anywhere else.
No,
up until now. So.
And that's the other thing that I've been starving for. You know, I've been reading the forums and my RSS feeds and the emails and the forums from our fans and stuff, and I just don't know the other side of it. You know, yeah. No one's really talking except for the blanket statement that they released saying we look forward to being exonerated, blah, 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 whatever. But really, I haven't heard anyone else's defense or whatever. And to have Larry put it in a view that made me feel pretty good about it was great. I mean, I'm hoping that he's right and that, you know, they can settle out and come back into the market someday as a legitimate, you know, in the government's eyes, entity.
Yeah. Joining us now is Anti-Up's online columnist, John Lanier, who always knows exactly what's going on with this stuff and knows he knows more about the online stuff than in his little pinky, Chris, than I know anywhere else. So I was pleased as anything when he emailed us yesterday and said, hey, I got to be part of this show. And we're like, yeah. So, John, start us off here. What are your initial thoughts on Black Friday?
How you doing, guys? I think it's... the biggest thing to hit the online world ever. And it's going to be real interesting to see who the major players are shaping up, you know, in the next 5 years. I think this is really, there's a deeper underlying story than what's first come out. And I'm pretty sure that the Vegas casinos with their Washington connections are in some way responsible for some of this orchestration. And don't be surprised if Full Tilt or PokerStars were ever make the scene again, it would only be in conjunction with teaming up with a major casino player who might buy them in the future or something to get them back in the U.S. But I think for the next at least 5 years, those two are probably dead to the world as far as U.S. players go.
Wow, well, 5 years.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you brought that up because I actually had a call from this morning. I was talking to one of our clients who's not involved in any of this, but he was saying this similar thing. He really thought in his gut, and he said he's not a skeptic by nature, but that this really does seem like the government is trying to clear the deck, as Larry said in our first interview here, to handpick who they bring in. And my response to that was, you know, again, I'm a little more naive, I guess, but it seems like the timing of all this is really geared more toward the fact that the enforcement regs of the UIGA just went into effect last summer, so they couldn't do anything about it until then. And it just seems like a right amount of time. Now, I'm not saying what you're saying is incorrect. It very well could be correct, but it does seem like there's a couple different theories, right?
Another interesting point is the timing of the release of it all. On April 15th,
yeah,
it was released on a Friday, which normally in news days, as you guys know, it's a slow time to release it. You don't release a major story on a Friday at 2 o'clock unless you really don't want it to get a lot of coverage. So in some ways, it was like they didn't want it covered by Wall Street too much. It was almost like it was trying to be slipped through. But, you know, that's an interesting point also. Does it have a tax implication because of April 15th as well? I don't know. Are they going to take these people's records? Everyone had online money. There's been questions about if you want to, if the time comes when you're finally able to get your funds off of PokerStars or Full Tilt, are you going to have to pay extra penalties for back taxes in situations where you may not have reported in the past because they're going to have full access to all these records? So there's a lot of fear in some poker players' minds related to that as well.
See, I actually brought this up with Larry on our earlier interview, and okay. I just think that's just crazy thinking. The amount of people who play online poker, the government just does not have the staff or the means to keep track of every single individual and what they've put into the site and what they're taking off as profit, and to have to, they're not going to like go through every one of our tax returns to find out. There's just no way. They don't have the manpower or the all they care about is stopping the root of all this. I just don't see that happening.
I would agree with you for 90% of the players out there, they're not going to care about, but they're going to look at the Sean Deebs of the world and the high player, high stakes players, you know, the U.S. players who were definitely U.S. players who may not have or may have underreported. They may have reported $300,000 in earnings 1 year when they really, Full Tilt paid them $600,000 over the course of a year. And I think some of those guys may be looking at some trouble, but we'll see.
And I wonder that too. Do you guys feel like the DOJ and the FBI are merely just fingers on the fist of this atrocity, or do you feel like they're acting on their own like they're supposed to, and the government really had nothing else to do with it, like this whole Harry Reid and all the other stuff? That's what I'm just curious about. Is I know that Larry had mentioned in the interview that it's a business, that the FBI and the DOJ are businesses that have to make money, and so that's where all these fines are going to come in. But do they really are they acting by themselves, or were they really pushed by, say, the Harry Reids or whoever is lobbying for the big land-based casinos and saying, hey, get this done as soon as you can because we really do have a plan in motion to get poker legalized? Does that happen? I mean, I'm not being naive.
I would say that it is happening for one specific reason. In the confirmation hearing of Hollander, who's the attorney general for our current president, he was asked specifically by the nomination committee if he considered online gambling illegal. And his answer was, yes, he considered online gambling illegal. That's an unusual question to come up in a confirmation hearing unless it's being pushed by somebody in the congressional world.
Good point. Well, I know you wanted to talk about probably who's being referred to as the second most hated person in poker these days. Obviously, the justice official that's been front and center is probably public enemy number one. But talk to us a little bit about the guy who probably the government's pinning its case on a little bit here.
The whistleblower.
Yeah.
Yes. For the lack of a better term.
Yes, a gentleman named Daniel Tezakov has been, of course, and all this stuff is alleged, but he was arrested in April of 2010, and initially he ran a processing payment center out of Australia called Intrabank, and he owed money to both Full Tilt, PokerStars, and the Cirrus Network, and they actually sued him for back payments that they felt were owed, and I think Full Tilt, I'm not sure the exact figure, but Full Tilt believed that they were owed $30 million. Cirrus believed they were owed something like $15 million or something from this gentleman. And so they actually approached the FBI and basically told them how to get with this guy, how to basically arrest him. He was arrested in Las Vegas and first initially denied bail by the FBI. Then the next day, he was awarded bail. So a lot of people think that's when the deal was struck. And so essentially, at that point, he might have become the government's, you know, inside man. And over the course of the year, from April of last year until these indictments were done in early March, apparently he was working behind the scenes and they were gathering their resources and doing their banking investigations until they found these other people that were obviously involved with some criminal activity, and then finally had enough of a case to release it.
Hmm. And they had mentioned, too, that when Manhattan got involved, that once they get involved, their case is usually pretty solid, airtight. I don't know, have you done any looking into that to see if that's the case, or you think that that's... I mean, that's how... Well, I looked at a lot of the forums when this was happening on 2 Plus 2 and whatever, and people were chiming in like that, saying, you know, once Manhattan gets involved, you know, they have a rock solid case. Yeah. So
my wife is an attorney, and she does a lot of business type attorney work, and she was agreeing that the district attorney of, you know, lower debt New York district attorney office has a lot of what are basically considered attorneys that are experts in forensic banking. So they're very good at tracking down mob money. They're also very good at tracking down foreign held funds. And so that's their particular specialty, is tracking down bank irregularities because of their close dealings with Wall Street. And so they had the right attorney general's office on the case, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, John, I know you... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I know you always are tracking traffic online, and I know a lot of folks have been looking at sites like Poker Scout over the weekend to see how traffic has changed. What's kind of your view on where the traffic is disappearing from, and where it's going to go?
Yeah, that's very interesting, because I was online, and it appears that Full Tilt has basically lost about 50% of their traffic. It looks like PokerStars, amazingly, has only lost about 20% of their traffic. And, of course, Absolute, UB, as part of the Cirrus network, apparently almost 100% of their customers were U.S.-based. So they were fully hit the hardest. I think this is a minor blip for somebody like a PokerStars. It'll be interesting to see. You know, I don't think they're really all that concerned. Obviously, a 20% hit is major, but it's you could tell that they've been structuring their company to be an international company for several years now. Same with... you know, Full Tilt certainly been making moves into Europe, and a lot of it makes you wonder how much of this was anticipated by them.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let me ask you, too. At the start of our conversation, you said 5 years or something. But we also talked to Larry a little bit about the possibility of there being a settlement or whatever. And I remember when Party Poker first got into all that trouble, they paid, what was it? It was like $600 million fine or something, right? And
right.
then they said, if you pay this fine when poker is legal or whatever they want to call it, regulated in the United States, you'll be able to come back. So
exactly.
Is that something that you think might happen here, where they may just settle out of court? You know, because some of these indictments may not stick. So they may end up just paying a huge fine, getting off with probation or whatever the hell it is, and then saying, okay, you've paid this fine and you have to sit out for 3 years or whatever, because that was what the window was going to be under Harry Reid's bill anyway. Do you think that's the case where they may be able to, you know, pay a fine and then come back like Party Poker can?
Absolutely. I think that nobody has a crystal ball, and 5 years might be way too far out. But I think a better scenario might be that when the Vegas casinos do decide to start partnering with somebody, are they going to partner with the Party Poker BWIN combination? Because recently Party Poker acquired BWIN. Are they going to partner with those European companies that they can basically get tainted free, or are they going to try to go with a company that has, you know, the Department of Justice looking at them? And really, I guess it depends on what the spotlight is in the future. I think if they come up with money to in essence, pay off the government, they will be a lot more attractive.
Right.
I'm not sure. Not sure if that's the right term, but, you know, is this also a ploy to beat down, you know, their assets to where they're more acquirable? So instead of having to pay $1 billion to get a full tilt, you might be able to buy it up for $250 million when the time comes, you know, and basically acquire the assets that way. PokerStars may make themselves, you know, they may come out of this almost virtually unscathed and still be the major player in Europe and might come back in the U.S. even stronger.
It's crazy.
Yeah. If partnered with a big company. So who are the companies that could partner with these guys? It would be obviously the Harrah's and MGM's. And I don't see them, you know, hooking up with any of the Indian casinos anymore. So.
All right, so talk about where people, obviously people can still play in the U.S. now. I got an email from Doyle's room this week with a nice little picture of Doyle Brunson draped by an American flag saying, hey, we're still accepting U.S. players. I heard Bodog was still pretty triumphant in letting people know. There's still a lot of places where people can play if they want, right?
Oh, absolutely. I was playing on Cake last night. I know it still works. There's an interesting point also, I guess. Why haven't those other companies been investigated? And should people be taking their money off? I don't know. Is the next shoe going to fall? You know, I would hope that all of these companies that are still allowing U.S. players are legitimate and have not been doing any falsifying of their banking records. And if they have, I'm sure there's a big pucker factor going on with them right now.
Well, I imagine too. It's been conjecture, of course, on our part, on all of our parts, about everything that's going on here. But you know, I really think that the Justice Department went after the big fish first.
Sure.
And you know, whether they're making a case against these smaller ones, I don't know. If we've seen anything with online poker, it's just so many of these little sites. And who knows, there could be other ones that pop up in the next couple of months to try to fill the void, too. It really is a great big game of whack-a-mole to get rid of all of them.
It could be that these little companies, you know, the smaller poker sites, really are not doing anything wrong in terms of UIEGA. I mean, if you can still deposit money via a credit card, obviously that means the credit card company is okay with it. Mm-hmm. And so they don't have to go through these manipulations with banks and using falsified bank accounts, which is what they're basically being, the two bigger companies are being charged with. I think everybody that played online poker knew there was something funny going on when you would get, you know, your credit card statements would say that your bill was charged to some golf enterprise out of Singapore or something. And nobody would really question that. But, you know, everybody knew that there was something, some kind of subterfuge going on all along. Chris, I think you've mentioned when you get payouts, they come through DHL off of a bank of Singapore, when you would get PokerStars payouts, et cetera.
That's correct.
So, I mean, it was like, you know, everybody knew there was like weird banking manipulations going on in the background, but we really didn't care, did we?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, too, that you're playing still, and I know your wife's an attorney, and so you're not nervous at all about losing any of your money or...
Oh, I've got money tied up on Full Tilt. I had very little on PokerStars, but... I have already just written it off. If I ever see it again, it'll be great. But other than that, I don't anticipate it for a long time. The better question is, and this is one that I would, you know, maybe you guys could reach out to these two players. What about Jason Mercier and Vanessa Selps, who basically won the last NAPT that'll probably ever occur? You know that, as I remember, PokerStars has a habit of when their players, when players win big events, and if it's a sponsored pro, they take their prize money and put it into their PokerStars accounts. They don't give it to them as cash. They did this with one of the gentlemen when the NetTiller account, I think it was, I forget his name, but one of the NetTiller players, or one of the players who won the PokerStars Caribbean Adventures, had his $1.5 million deposit in PokerStars. He tried to get it transferred out of NetTeller the next day, and then NetTeller was shut down, and he was his money was trapped for about a year. So has Vanessa Selps had her money deposited from her recent win in PokerStars? Same with James Mercier and his high-stakes roller, or his high-stakes win. And did they just basically have those accounts frozen as well?
Yeah, it's a good question. I do have a feeling that you know, the pros who are affiliated with these sites are getting better or special dispensation over the general public too, though. I think
you would think,
you know. But that's a good point.
You know, the other thing too, I thought was interesting last the couple days that they made a deal. The two big sites, Full Tilt and PokerStars, made a deal with the Department of Justice to get their domains back long enough to process player payouts. So we'll see how that process goes over the next week or so, and how easy it is. But I think to me that was going to be the big concern with putting money on another site is, you know, you already lost money on one site. How many times do you want to keep putting money on another site and having it frozen if the investigation gets to that point? But in a lot of ways, I think the Department of Justice probably lost a step here by letting people to cash out so quickly. It almost emboldens me to feel like I can put money on another site and not really necessarily have to worry about it.
Right. That's true. I think you're absolutely right about that. Chris?
Oh, no, I mean, I think that's true. I just don't know how fast this is going to actually happen. I mean, I got the email about them saying, we got good news, we can process your cash out, but, you know, for right now, we have to take your cash out and put it back into your cashier's, you know, account or whatever. And then when we're ready to do it, we'll let you know. So I really don't know how. I know they got that approved. I just don't know how fast it's going to be before we actually get our money.
I don't, as a computer security person, which is what I do in the daytime sometimes, I don't like the fact that the government can come and confiscate domain names. I still think that's kind of wrong. I don't think they needed to do that in this case. I think there was a lot of overreaction. You know, they could have. Seems like they didn't really handle this whole situation as well as they probably could have. The fact that they froze accounts, from what my wife was telling me, basically, and this is all conjecture, of course, is that you don't freeze accounts unless you're going after that kind of money. And so it makes you wonder what kind of civil work is going on in the background separate from the criminal side of this. So obviously there's criminal action being taken against all these defendants that were listed, and some of them have been arrested, etc. But what's the point of freezing the people's accounts unless you're going to later do something with that?
Yeah, it is kind of weird, because you're right, they could have easily just had PokerStars shut us out and say, due to government regulations, cash games aren't allowed in your area or whatever, and that would have kept us out. And then they could have kept the site up. So, yeah, you know, shocking that the DOJ and FBI or whatever did something that we don't approve of.
But that's kind of my point, is there's more to this story that we have not heard yet. This is not the end of it. And that whole civil side is still, you know, there's something more brewing. Do they want all the assets that were available? I mean, what is their thought process? Who knows at this point?
Well, our money isn't considered an asset, though.
Well, see, that's the whole, there's a whole legal question about that, and that basically, that's some people have actually thought that that's part of what this is all about, is are they going to basically have some kind of class action or basically some kind of lumping of the players and ruling that all people who are participating were in violation of some kind of banking regulation at some point. And just basically taking the whole user community as some kind of group and basically ruling that everybody that was on these sites obviously deposited money through some kind of incorrect method. And that's a scare. And I don't know that that's going to ever happen, and that's just people's conjecture or people's conspiracy theory. Is that what's really brewing in the background also?
Yeah, I would think that might be a long shot.
It's a long shot, and it would be a lot of outrage.
Well, you know, and I think the problem with that is that, you know, the UIGA was pretty specific on allowing cash outs to players. I mean, it really was targeting putting money in. I don't think they really cared about people getting their money off the site. They just didn't want people to continue to keep funding it. And, you know, a lot of these indictments are hinging on the UIGA. And I think if they were to go and try to attack it from an angle that it wasn't intended for, you almost hurt your overall case. But
sure. But
again, that's just conjecture on my part. You know, I'm just a little tiny at home player here. I'm not a high priced international lawyer. So
one of the questions, one of the other points is how do they defend against this? And one of the obvious defenses is that they just take the approach that poker is not a game, not a gambling game, but it's a game of skill. If they can get a federal judge to agree to that, then basically all these cases are dismissed and nobody has done anything wrong. Second thing that they can argue is that the card games are actually not dealt in the United States. They're dealt in servers in overseas countries. So did any kind of gambling actually take place in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe technically no. And that would be another type of defense. So it'll be interesting to see what tactics these lawyers manage to pull out, if any, that survive, that can convince these attorneys and these other lawyers and judges involved. So,
John, we certainly appreciate you joining us. I guess my final question is, you've written about subscription-based sites in our magazine in the past. No doubt they are relatively giddy right now. I've got a number of calls from them already. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about how the subscription or sweepstakes-based sites work and whether it's a viable option for them in the meantime?
Yep, sure. Actually, I do belong to one. But you basically pay a monthly fee. The one that I belong to is Club WPT, and you pay approximately $20 a month. By the way, if you sign up with them and use a code of season 9, you get a week, like 4 weeks free. But anyway, their numbers apparently are just going through the roof right now. They're getting thousands of members a day, apparently. And you don't really have the volume of tournaments and the volume of cash games that you do. You don't really have any cash games as such, but
because how do you have cash games? Why would you even have those?
Yeah, you don't really. You don't really have any cash games. You have sit and goes, and you have tournaments.
Okay.
And you play for actual money based on the subscription. So they take part of that subscription dollars that everybody pays, and they pool them, and you have nightly tournaments, weekly tournaments, monthly tournaments based on those. So that's how it's basically legal, is because it's based off the essentially the what is called sweepstakes model in the legal world, as opposed to other type of gambling. So just like you can run a sweepstakes, you can basically do this form of poker.
That's just ridiculous.
It is kind of.
It really is. I mean, really, think about it. Oh, if I pay $20 a month and pay $240 a year, I can play in tournaments and make money, but I can't pay $240 at once and play cash games with it somewhere. I mean, it's just stupid.
It is that.
I mean, I'm happy that somebody came up with this idea and has this viable option for people, and I'm not saying that's stupid. I'm saying that the government and the laws are stupid. It's just ridiculous.
And Card Player used to have one as well, and I think it's still in effect, and I think it's called Card Player. I don't remember the exact name of that one anymore.
It's funny because I remember Card Players being bought out by somebody because they were dying.
That's
or something, right?
But it did die, but then it was bought out by someone else, and I think it's still a viable option out there.
Because I see ads for it in their magazine.
Right.
Still.
Yeah. So they're probably going to gain some membership as well.
Yeah.
All right, John, again, we appreciate you taking some time. Very good thoughts that you passed on, and we'll certainly keep in touch with you here as things develop, because as you mentioned, we're in the very early baby stages of this whole thing.
Absolutely. And, I have one question, for you guys, actually.
Sure.
I needed your opinion. What do you think the impact on this year's World Series of Poker is going to be? Do you think we're going to have a lot of online players using this as their last hurrah and attempting to make a final bracelet before they go back off to graduate school because their online careers are killed? Are they going to be leaving the country and going to play in other foreign countries, which some of them actually have said that they're planning on doing? There are a lot of talk about Mexico, Canada, and Thailand from them.
So, interesting. I think, again, interesting the timing on being able to get the money out of the sites if that actually happens. I think that was going to be a big thing in my mind, that if people had all this money tied up online, they're not going to be able to go to the World Series and play as much. But if they're able to get the money out, then I think it's not going to be as harsh as we probably thought a couple days ago. But obviously, I mean, a good chunk of the people that play in the main event get there through online satellites, even though it's not officially endorsed. So the fact that they can't do it, at least on the big sites, I think the main event is going to see a hit. I've seen some people suggest around 5,000 this year, down from, I think it was, 6,400 last year or something like that. So that'd be my guess. But, and then other people have told me that they thought that the lead-up events would probably have more participation now, because, I mean, the one thing you'll lose about not being able to play online, you can go play a home game with your buddies if you want, which I imagine a lot of these people will, but you're not going to go to a home game and play big tournaments with big fields.
Right.
So, you know, if people are going to play live, more likely than not, they're going to play tournaments. So, you know, you might see those lead-up events have actually bigger fields, just to guess again on my part.
And I agree about the size of the field. When you were saying people were speculating 5,000, I have a feeling it's going to be something like that. It's going to be like 4,300 people now. And that's the other thing, too, is if you want a satellite, is that money sent and you're going and getting it still? Is that already been sent to, like, Harrah's? So Harrah's is in...
The money never went to Harrah's anymore after the UIGA. I mean,
right.
You had to get your money otherwise. So I would think now that you can cash out now, you can get that money now. I mean, you still are going to have to take that extra step and take the money and actually go register. So it would have been different. I don't know. But, you know, I was joking to somebody the other day that, you know, and I said, I prefaced it, don't get me wrong, it's not that I don't want to win the World Series of Poker main event, but I don't want to win it this year.
Yeah.
if I'm going to win it at some point, I want it to be a different year, because this year I think the field's going to be so small that it's not going to be as lucrative as if I, you know, wait a couple years from now, maybe we have regulated poker.
It's nice to be such a poker talent, Scott, that you can actually call the year that you want to win the World Series. It's like Babe Ruth pointing to the right field or something.
All right, John, again, we appreciate it. We'll keep in touch, and it's been fun.
Thanks, John.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Talk to you later.
Hey, this is AJ Benzing.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gowan.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Reamer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe.
This is Paul Wasika.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Dora Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Oh, good. Great points coming up. You know, the best thing about this, Chris, is that just talking it out with people, I think.
Yeah, it's like therapy. You know,
yeah, I mean, you can sit there by yourself and try to make sense of it, but it's really nice to, like, bounce ideas back and forth. I mean, we had the home game on Saturday and talked to that a little bit. And, you know, and I think to some degree, we both got emails and phone calls right after this happened. Say, hey, are you guys going to do a breaking news?
Yeah.
PokerCast on this, and our knee-jerk reaction, I think, and I heard this the same with 2+2, is, you know, why? I mean, what can we say at this point? We don't know anything. We're still trying to make sense of it, too. So the only defense I could see for having that is just the cathartic nature of just kind of talking it out at the time, but I think we're a little bit more responsible by waiting a week, and obviously so much has changed.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Responsible is the key word there, and I think that was what the other poker casts were saying as well, is, you know, we need to mull it over and look at it and try to line up experts, because we're not experts in this stuff. You know, we're not experts in anything, but but you know what I mean? I mean, I wouldn't feel comfortable just spewing about this when it does no good. And so I really felt like you're right. I felt we need to be responsible about it and wait until we had as many facts as possible and let it set in and not just, you know, go off half-cocked because we're pissed off about it. And it was funny that day because, you know, Big Dave out in Las Vegas always calls me when big stories happen.
Yeah.
So when my phone rings and it's his face on the phone, I get nervous because I know something's up. And so at the time I was driving to my parents' house, and he calls me and he's all frantic and he's like, "Hey, what's this about PokerStars being indicted, blah, blah, blah?" And I'm like, and I'm in the car on my phone. I'm like, "I don't know. It's probably UIGEA crap that they've gotten around before. I don't know what it is, but, you know," he says, "Well, you know, I'll send you a link or whatever." And so I was like, "Thanks." So as I'm driving to my parents, I look at the link, and I'm like, "Oh, man. All right, I better email Scott." So normally when I email you, and this happens a lot, or, you know, it'll be something for our show, I'll say, "Hey, this is pretty good for our news desk," and you'll be like, "Yep, I already got it." And then I'll say, "Scott, you know, hey, did you hear about it?" "Oh, yeah, I read that yesterday." I'm like, "Oh." Whatever, I can never tell you anything. For some reason, you work like 19 hours a day, and like 12 of those hours is scouring every news story on the planet. So I'm like, he already knows about whatever this is, so I'll just text him and say, "You know, indictments don't look good for us, huh?" Or something cryptic like that. And you're like, "I have no idea what you're talking about." And I'm like, "What? What do you mean?
News.
It's the biggest story in the planet. What do you mean you don't know what I'm talking about? You know every single story I sent to you," and you're always like, "Yeah, all pompous and I already know it. Don't worry about it. I got it. It's on the file." And you didn't know. And I'm like, I felt bad because the way you found out was me saying, you know, "Indictments aren't good, huh?" You know, or whatever.
Then you got fired from your job. "Hey, man, tough break." "Oh, what do you mean?" Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, the memo went out that you got fired before you were told you were fired, you know. But, yeah, it turns out you didn't know. I actually knew before you, and that started off a whole flurry of emails between us.
Yeah.
And then your BlackBerry was lighting up like the 4th of July.
Yeah, it was just a crappy day to begin with. I mean, we had to, you know, put our pet down, the only pet that we've ever had, the only pet my wife has ever had in her life, wow. You know, 15 great years. And, you know, so that, you know, just brutal as it was. And then we, you know, I told the wife, "Let's just get out of the house. Let's go have lunch and do some shopping, try to take our mind off of it." And then, of course, you know, then I get this. And as soon as I got the text from you and I asked you what the hell was going on, then all of a sudden,
yeah,
I couldn't even hold on to the BlackBerry in Old Navy because it was just buzzing so much and calls. I even had a guy call me up and acted like we were long lost friends, and whoever it was, we probably are long lost friends, but your name didn't come up on my phone and we just chatted for 15 minutes. It was a great call. I have no idea who you were.
Oh my God, are you serious?
But yeah, so we talked through that, and then, you know, of course, the emails and texts and stuff like that. And, you know, wow, I mean, what a spot to be in. You know, I'm out trying to keep my wife as happy or at least not as sad as possible. And now all of a sudden, probably one of the bigger stories since we've been in business breaks, and I'm trying to make sense of it from my little BlackBerry.
Yeah. That's what I did. I used my iPhone, and I clicked on the link I'm driving in the car and I'm typing into Google online DOJ. I mean, I'm typing all these things and trying to find any news story, and that's how I found it. And then when I read it, I'm reading it as I'm driving, and I'm trying to not just swerve into another lane, oncoming traffic, and end it all right there.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh my God. So I usually tell you bad news because you have this way of trying to be optimistic with everything. So I'm looking for you to spin it, and you're not. And I'm
didn't
like,
help you, man. Sorry.
Oh my God, you know. And then, as you had a rough day, so did I. I found out my mother needed to go in for a hospital for something, and so it was just a just a terrible day for all of Antiup, you know, especially us at home stuff too. So it was a rough day. That Black Friday definitely sums it up for me.
Yeah, capital Black for us. But you know, I got home, I read the indictment, and then the first thing I thought is, you know, I logged on to PokerStars and nope, all right, can't play. And I'm like, well, you know, guess what? I guess I'll go to the home game tomorrow because Apes isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I get to the home game, and of course, Dr. Frank there, hey, what are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, you haven't heard?
Yeah, that surprised me. You didn't hear.
So I got to do what you did to me, which is kind of fun. And so, you know, we haven't played a home game. I didn't want to miss the home game, but I was excited about Apes because, you know, I want a seat, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, hey, I got to get off the schneid here. It's been a year since I've cashed, and I'm like, you know what? I can't take my laptop and multitask. I'm just going to stay home. But I'm like, all right, fine, I'll go to the home game, and, you know, had a good home game. And then all of a sudden, Chris, the BlackBerry buzzes again, and it's Poker Geek. And he's like, hey, Scott, do you know you're in Apes and you have a live stack? You're just being blinded off. So I had to let everybody know there. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you got to be kidding me. I don't know how I can still be playing Apes. They froze U.S. players out, right? So it looked like it was just like maybe a temporary glitch where, you know, if you'd already qualified for a tournament, they hadn't blocked you out. And, of course, Geek got excited because he's, like, registered for, like, 900 tournaments before all this happened. He thought he was going to be able to play for the entire year. You know, eventually they caught up to that and unregistered everybody from them. So it was I missed my last shot to actually play on PokerStars, and I had no idea.
You know, and I do want to ask you – we talked about this at the home game. I was ecstatic because I actually played on Friday.
Yeah.
And I played like right up until it happened, apparently, because I played for like a half an hour and I won. I actually had a winning session and I was excited about it. I was like, hey, I had a pretty good winning session on the end there. That felt pretty good. And then so I was saying to you at the home game, hey, my last online session was a winning one. I should be happy about that. And I do. I feel good because whenever I have a losing session, I always feel terrible, and I feel like I have to get back on and play again until I win. And if I had to have a losing session as my last session, and I might not be able to play online for another 3 years or whatever it is going to be, I'd have been eating at me for 3 years. But I had a winning session, and it was actually a pretty decent one, and it was a winning session at Stud 8 and No Limit Hold'em. I had played two different games at once, and I won at both tables, and I felt so good. And then you're like, no way, dude. If I'm going to... you know, have my last session, I want it to be a losing one. And I'm like, why? Because I'm never going to get that money back anyway, so, you know, screw them. Or, I don't understand that. I mean, I will get this money, I think, eventually. So I had
it's a different story now that it sounds like I'll be able to cash out. But the point I was making is, you know, hey, if they're going to take my money from me, you know, it's almost like, I won because I lost. Well, you're only taking a little bit more money from me. I guess that's what I was thinking. But
okay.
No, I'm glad you ended on a winning point. And I was hopeful that I might still win. Poker Geek became my little sideline reporter here.
Yeah.
And was sending us emails, and I was updating everyone. And I made the final table. Not hard to do since there were only 12 people that entered. You know, a couple of the Americans that qualified by satellite, and then all of our lucky people from around the world that live in countries that embrace common sense and can still play online poker.
Yes.
But I made the final table, and then you know, Geek was just cracking me up with these emails. And here's my favorite though: you have significantly less chips than the other two setouts. You need to work on your dead stack game.
That's pretty funny.
So I was just been in a little bad rotation there, where I was getting hit by the blinds a little bit more, not winning. People were folding to me or something like that. But I want to congratulate Mike. It was my MMD12345, which, wow, I believe is my luggage lock combination. He actually won the last Apes event of this year, a mighty 12-player field with four sit-outs, I think.
Jeez.
But we're not going to take anything away from Mike, and congratulations to him. He called in. Obviously, we've got a lot going on here, so we're not going to play the clip. But, you know, he might actually be in Vegas when we're there.
Cool.
The end of June. And he's excited about maybe getting his banana, and we'll concoct some kind of banana ceremony.
We'll have you down on one knee and holding it over your head like a sword or something and handing it to him.
Well, you know, it's going to be worth something, right? Because, oh, yeah, one, we can't get any more bananas from Walmart anyhow. You know, that was my little well, my wife was worried about the business and everything, and I'm like, you know, hey, we lost a, you know, a major account, but guess what? I didn't blow a bunch of money on bananas last week that I don't need. There's a bright side, baby.
That's right. You always got to find the silver lining.
So, yeah, so Mike here is going to get the last official Apes banana until, of course, we can bring it back at some point. So, you know, and then, you know, again, we're trying to have a little fun with this as much as we can. It's still kind of unfortunate, but some other people were kind of chiming into one of the things that Geek sent us is, you know, Irwin, who I call Sean Connery.
Yeah.
For good reason. I played, and he was accusing us, Chris, of going to an elaborate ruse on our part to avoid having to play him in a PLO event.
That's right. None of this actually happened. We set up all these, we planted all these stories just so we wouldn't have to play him in PLO. He is good in PLO. You got to give him props for that.
Yeah. He's probably not so good that I would generate a 51 count indictment. To avoid playing him, but we'll see. But I did also appreciate all the folks that said that Walmart got advance notice the DOJ's action, and that's why they pulled the plastic bananas from the shelf. They didn't want to get caught up in this and it'll be a party to online poker at all. And a great photo. Check out the forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum. Gary, one of our longtime listeners, did a great little Lego memorial to Apes.
Oh,
I won't spoil it by describing it, but trust me, you'll get a little giggle out of it if you go to the forum and check that out.
Well, you know, there are a lot of peripheral things to this as well, and one of them that affects me is TV. You know, ESPN pulled its NAPT, won't air any .NET commercials anymore. I guess the World Series coverage won't be affected, but right. they pulled the big game on Fox. They pulled a $1 million challenge. And you know, you got to know that, like, high-stakes poker is dead after this season. Unless they find someone else to sponsor it.
Like, oh, actually, I did hear one of the subscription-based sites sent out a press release today that they signed a sponsorship deal with it. So that show will probably survive.
That's good. But, you know, yeah. I mean, it's not going to be the same.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, any of these shows that were created, definitely created by the Big Three or were supported by them are probably dead for right now until, you know, other sponsors can be found. And it is interesting to me, too, that TV is always a little more cautious in the advertising world than others. I mean, you look back at the UIGA, they're the ones that kind of forced the issue that it had to be .NETs that they were advertising, which, right. You know, is really just kind of almost ridiculous.
It's semantics, but, really.
Yeah, but you know, whatever hurdles you got to put up, you know, if you want our money, we'll do it. And now they seem to be the ones that are quickly, hey, you know, we don't want to be associated with them at all. I mean, I can assure you that any up, I would be happy to take a .NET ad.
Oh yeah.
Still, I mean, you know, there's still value to play on a .NET. You know, you can still practice and play. But it's weird to me that TV would go to that extreme. But you know, that's just that medium, I guess. So.
And we have TV for ourselves, too. I mean, we do some TV shows, and not necessarily sponsored by any of these rooms or anything, or these online sites, but our players wear patches sometimes, so probably going to have to do something with that, I think, no?
Yeah, you know, I talked to Kirk, our TV producer, a little bit a couple days ago, and he was like, whoa, what's going on, man?
Yeah.
And so I had to fill him in on what. So at this point, I know his show has been the Windy City Poker Championship, which, you know, is a great program that he put together that's being held up just temporarily, it sounds like, until the networks that we air that on, their legal department clears it. You know, again, our shows are not sponsored by .NETs or anything like that, so it shouldn't be an issue, but... You know, what happens if you got obviously got people wearing patches? That's the whole point of these things. So, you know, are the TV legal beagles here going to say, you know, hey, you can't even have patches on the show? And then what do you do? Go in and with shows that are already produced? I mean, do you just not air them, or do you go in and blur out the patches or do something weird? I don't know. We'll see. But
I mean, it's just so weird too that would even matter. I mean, you know, people wear pot leaves on their clothing, and, you know, smoking pot is illegal. You know what I mean? But they wear stuff on their shirt. You know what I mean? It's so stupid to me. This whole thing is stupid. Why do we live in America?
Yeah.
I want to move to Lithuania.
Yeah, it's because the weather's better than Canada.
So. That's about it, because other than that, I'd live in, if Canada was warm, I'd be there tomorrow.
But you know, you mentioned the ripples of this, and that you know, I've done a lot of media interviews this week, and that's kind of a little of my mantra quote here is that these ripples haven't made it to shore yet. We really don't know exactly the full length of all of this, and every day there's like 30 things I think of that are going to be affected by this, things that are different that I didn't think about. So in that sense, it's kind of interesting to kind of watch what's going to happen. I mean, obviously, TV is somewhat devastated. Doesn't mean that there won't be poker programming anymore, but certainly a lot less.
Right. Oh,
different. I mean, again, TV production is so expensive. I mean, the people that have the money to do it are the dot-coms, whether they call them dot-nets or whatever. So you take that money out of the marketplace, things are going to be hurt. And that's the same thing with anything that they sponsored. I mean, these sites spent very, very large marketing budgets divided between all kinds of different things, you know, television, magazines, all those affiliate deals to keep bloggers in business.
Yeah.
Things like that. So you're going to see, I think, a significant contraction of poker products of some sort, at least initially, unless people can find a way to replace that. I mean, unfortunately, our magazine is very different. You know, our ads room is all brick and mortar rooms. But some of the other ones, I mean, you flip through it. I mean, you know, you got to go through 12 pages of online ads before you get to the first page of real content.
Yep. And even that content is all online content. A lot of these magazines, like Card Player, for instance, has like 30 pages dedicated to hand-to-hand online combat hand analysis and things like that, and online player of the year and online tournament recaps. And you know, are they going to fill those pages with something else? Are they going to, like, who's their online player of the year now? Is it the person who was in first, or do they have to now start playing on, like, Bodog in tournaments?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's so weird. A lot of stuff is really in the air, and a lot of decisions have to be made editorially. And yeah, you're right. I mean, do they fill those pages? Does the magazine become a skeleton of its former self? Do they take those writers now and convert them to land-based casino writers, or what are they doing? You know, because for us, it doesn't affect. Really, we have one online column from John, and it doesn't run every month. And when it does, it's basically, you know, talking about players, you know, or whatever. So really, it would affect one page in our magazine, and then the ad. Other than that, really, it doesn't affect the content. We're still putting out 72 pages of content without hardly any online stuff on there. So it'll be interesting to see how they fill up and what they do with their products.
Yeah, and I really feel a much heavier heart for people that depend on these affiliate deals. I mean, the great thing about being a newly minted poker journalist, I mean, you can just create a blog in a minute and start yapping about your favorite poker hands, and you put a couple of links on there, and guess what? You get a little pocket money, or some people have actually, if you do really good jobs on those blogs, make them really interesting, you've made a living out of it.
Yeah.
And boom, gone, overnight, gone. You know, obviously there's some other sites and other things they can do, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, in some of the interviews I've talked about, I mean, if you've built your business as a completely U.S. business marketing to U.S. online players, and now all of a sudden the big three are out of the marketplace, I mean, now, do you just shut down your business, or do you have to find a way to compete globally, or turn your business into an international business overnight? Yeah. And that's not easy to do.
Yeah.
So we'll see on that. And then I also wonder about, you know, like online training programs and stuff. You know,
depends on their business model. I know that, like, when you talk about Sean Deebs, when we talked about him before on the show and his live training one, you know, it's not going to work now because they can't come to his house and watch him play online. Unless he maybe hooks up with one of these other sites, but
or
really,
he has old videos or something.
Old
but
videos,
I mean,
but
eventually that's going to get old. You know, you don't have that, as you mentioned, that initial live training of it, right?
Yeah, because that was the whole point, was that they would sit there and watch him play, and he would explain his moves while he was playing and going through his thought processes live. If it's manufactured like an old hand history that he converts to one of those videos, then it's sort of fabricated and not the same. You want to really get the feel of his thought process while he's doing it so you can get an idea. This other way, I don't know if it's the same. And a lot of these people probably have hand history saved in their computer for years, right? And so they can literally grab an interesting hand and, you know, like that book series that we've talked about before, Winning Poker Tournaments One Hand at a Time. You know, basically that's how they wrote their book, was they took their hand histories from a tournament and went through them hand by hand and decided, you know, I'm going to tell you what I was thinking on these hands, whatever. So that's that. You could come up with products that way. But yeah, to your point, absolutely. I mean, who wants to sit there and watch old videos, you know, that are made from hand histories that aren't actual poker tournaments being played live or whatever? And I agree. I think a lot of these are going to die altogether.
Well, yeah, the other thing, too, is if you're not able to play anywhere online, which you still are now, it's just a matter of for how long or how good the games are.
Right.
You know, a lot of these people, their play style is based on online play. It doesn't translate. I'm not saying that they couldn't be good live players, because right. they are, but the training is developed around a particular style of online play, and it's just not as useful then if you take it to a live setting. So,
right.
you know.
And it will be
kind of the thing that really drives me crazy is that, you know, the online sites for the most part are going to be fine. You know, as John said in his interview, I mean, PokerStars has really done a lot of migrating out of the U.S. already. So, you know, not that it won't hurt, but they're going to survive. But some of these other companies that were built up around it, you know, that's a high avenue.
Yeah. And I would like to be there to see how these players play live now that they have to deal with one hand every four and a half minutes rather than 35 hands at once from 12 different windows that are open. And, you know, I mean, their ROI is going to go way down because they can only enter one tournament at a time now.
You know, here I got a new idea, Chris.
Okay.
We're gonna patent this. I don't know if we can pull it off, but we're just going to patent it now so we get the royalties for the person who actually does. I wonder if the first brick and mortar room that's able to set up their poker tables in the room, follow me on this, all right?
All right.
In like a clover format, all right? So you got four tables in a clover, and you got a player in the middle, like in the circle, like a pit boss almost.
Yeah, and you can just spin his seat.
Exactly.
That's like, who was the chess guy who went crazy? And like, do you remember, he was the brilliant American, Bobby Fischer, right? Remember him?
We'll have to ask Faso, he's a chess
guy. Yeah, no, it's Bobby Fischer, and he went nuts, but... Bobby Fischer used to have like 12 grandmasters sitting around him, and he would walk from board to board and do all of his moves. And it's the same principle. He'd be in the middle, and they'd all be around him playing against him, and he would go to each board and make the move, and he would beat 45 people at once, you know, by playing different boards all at a time. So same thing, right? You sit in the middle, you have like a little spinning seat, and you just spin from table to table.
That would be awesome. Wouldn't it? People would come to watch that.
You know, you could like enlist some sort of camera crew who could like go to tournaments all around your area, and then they would just shoot you your hole cards, and you're playing you're playing at Hard Rock Tampa, you're playing at the Silks, you're playing you're playing all these different rooms, but you're sitting in your house and you got all these screens up. You know, you got to pay a crew to do it and stuff, but hey, you at least be able to play in more than one tournament.
You got to find a way to replicate that lost revenue, right? No problem.
You got to spend money to make money.
All right. Well, we'll end the show today talking about, you know, what this kind of means in the long term. And certainly, I think the thing that we're discussing is, you know, regulation. I wonder if this was really the kick in the pants that the poker playing community really needed to just truly get civic minded and call their lawmakers. Demand regulation, work to elect candidates that are sympathetic to it. I don't know. Initially, it certainly sounds like people are hopping mad and are doing that. In fact, I got a couple emails. Some people were suggesting that you just spend all day calling lawmakers wherever, which I think is kind of ridiculous. But definitely, I mean, it's worth calling your lawmakers now, letting them know that you think this is ridiculous and that regulation is the way to go. If you do believe in regulation, I know we have some of our listeners that would rather not, but do you think this is really going to galvanize? I kind of joked on the forum that I envisioned a poker player march on Washington.
Yeah.
You know, a bunch of us overweight kind of people, you know, with our backpacks and stuff showing up to go, yo, let me check raise.
And we're all so big that it would only take like a few hundred people to make it look like a million man march.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you have those little crowd estimates that the Park Service does.
I don't know.
Oh my gosh, 4 million people descended on the mall today. Oh, actually, it only turned out to be 12. We're just so far.
It was really big people.
But so I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I really don't know.
Is it going to get that organized?
I really feel so insignificant when I talk to a lawmaker like that, or when I write a letter.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think that it's going to take an effort like an ante up to try to do some sort of en masse thing. Like, you know, in the past, you and I have published letters in our magazine for players to cut out and mail to their, you know, their representatives or whatever. And maybe that's something we explore again, and maybe we do something. And I don't know. I'm not sharing my thoughts yet with the nation, but I think that that is one way that there's power in numbers. I feel like if I just call up Joe Senator and say, hey, you know, I'm outraged by this, and I know I'm in a conservative state, but you really need to go to bat for us and blah, blah, blah. I feel like he's just going to think I'm some idiot on the phone. He's going to hang up on me and do the little spinning his finger next to his temple like
before,
I'm crazy.
Actually, then.
Huh?
He must have talked to you before then.
Yeah. But, you know, I just don't feel like I don't feel like reaching out individually is enough.
I hear what you're saying, you know, and I think some people even on our forum are messaging the same thing. They, you know, like, what can we do besides call our lawmakers? Because I think so many people do think that that's just ineffective. And I don't have a good answer to that. I mean, every time we have a lawmaker on the show, I try to ask him that. I'm like, do you guys actually really, you know, pay attention to those phone calls or the letters? And, you know, no one's ever going to say for sure.
Right.
No one's going to say, no, we just throw it all in the trash can. But thanks anyhow. But you're right. It seems like, to me, sending form letters and stuff just doesn't seem like the way I want our country to run. And so, you know, if we're doing that kind of stuff, then it's hard for us to criticize when stuff happens on Friday, because, you know, we're just building this weird country that just is dysfunctional to begin with.
Yeah.
There's got to be a better way to do it. And so, you know, what I'm wondering, too, is if we start identifying candidates, you know, because I had a little argument on my Facebook page with some people about, because someone posted, well, Scott, remember it in November.
Yeah.
And I wrote back, I'm like, well, don't worry, I'm not going to forget it, but I don't know what Remember in November means. I mean, the UIGA was a product of the Bush Congress, and Black Friday was a product of the Obama Justice Department. So it's not a party thing. It's not like I can just throw the Democrats out or throw the Republicans out. That doesn't make any difference in this issue.
No, I agree.
So you really have to go drill down to people who are sympathetic to the poker industry. The problem with that is I don't think a lot of people are going to come out and say that.
Right.
When you're running it, you're not going to say, hey, I'm the poker player's candidate, because it's not as, I don't know, it's not as electable as other things. They call yourself something else. I'm the green candidate. Okay, now you got a bunch of, now you're making a statement that more people can support, you know. If you go to a town hall, a guy goes, hey, my platform is to regulate online poker, you're going to have 85-90% of the populace go, what the heck, that's what you're running for?
Yeah.
You know, so I think more it's trying to find lawmakers who common sense, who are able to look at an issue objectively and make a determination as to whether it's good or bad based on the merits of it, not their personal feelings. Don't go on anecdotes. Yeah, that's kind of one thing I noticed with some lawmakers. We have one, fortunately doesn't represent me, but north of us, and she's anti-gaming, and the reason that she gave in an interview was that someone sent her a letter about, one of her constituents sent a letter about how her husband bankrupted the family with his gambling addiction. And she said, I can't support that. That's just terrible. And I'm like, that's not common sense. That's emotion.
Yeah.
That's taking one crazy story and basing your whole public policy on it. So I don't have any faith in that woman to represent any issue.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so I think that's kind of what we need to look for, is people that are just more common sense. And unfortunately, that's just really tough. I mean, you can't figure that out in sound bites.
No.
You know?
And like the person who told you to remember it in November. Well, okay, well, we got a poker-playing president who is supposed to be a liberal and thinking that, you know, we should be able to do something like this in office, and it's probably been the worst 2 years that we've ever had for poker.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, how does that happen when he knows that he can make tons of money by regulating it? He knows that poker is a game of skill because he plays it. He knows that he needs money right now for the country. He needs to help turn this country around. And instead, he's, you know, maybe there is some end to his mean. I don't know. But really, if they're saying remember it in November, we've got the most important person in the entire country, in the most important office in the world, who's a poker player, and we still can't get it done.
Yeah, you know.
So remember, November means nothing.
Yeah.
That's frustrating. Well, the other thing I know we'll see, too, is I think some of these interstate poker bills are going to get new life now. You know, most of us have been anti them because, you know, they just weren't going to generate anything. But in the absence of anything else, maybe it's a shot. And maybe, that, if nothing else, I mean, that's kind of identifying the lawmakers who are interested in this kind of regulation, or at least thinking of it in the right terms. So maybe that's a little small guidepost as we navigate democracy going forward. But
didn't you say too that like the Florida, you know, wanted to put it back on table again because of this? Like he instantly went right back and said, "Hey, wait, before you say no again. Now look at all the people we'd get."
Yeah. And he's going to be on the Poker Wars show on Monday, I heard. So I'll be talking to him then to see where things have gone. But then I noticed the Iowa bill is back already. So that's exactly, you know, it's, you know, give some politicians credit here, lawmakers, that, you know, they seize an opportunity right away. And if they can reverse something at the last minute, let's do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to be a very interesting couple months, years. I don't know how long. I really don't know how long it's going to be interesting before something, the next big thing happens to not make us upset or ticked off or worried about what we're doing, right?
Yeah, well, just remember, you know, we made it through this in 2006 when we all thought the world was going to end, and sure enough, poker sites still stuck around. We still played poker online. I mean, I'd like to paraphrase Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park. Online poker will find a way, okay? No matter what, it always finds a way. And it will. And ultimately, I think that this will prove to be a good thing for us. I think that regulation will happen, and I think this will be what is the kick in the pants. Not necessarily from the poker player community, but maybe with the lawmakers and whatever. And I think that ultimately we'll be better off for it. It's just right now there's going to be some rough bumps. But the Ante Up Nation needs to know that you and I aren't going anywhere. We love doing this. This is what we do it for them. And it's not just about online poker when we're on the show. It's about poker. And, you know, we're proud to do this show. We do it every week. And it's our, you know, our love. So I wouldn't worry too much about us. We're going to be fine. And I think in the end, we're all going to be better for it.
Absolutely. Well, hey, great show, partner. I know it's been a tough week, but I'm looking forward to greener pastures and happier times the next week. And definitely looking forward to getting back to the Yuck Yucks.
Absolutely.
Next week's show and getting back to normal, as O'Malley said on our forum.
Well, I want to thank Larry Walters and John Lanier for joining us today. Really appreciate it. And like you said, back to normal next week. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Killing me. You kept breathing through your nose into the mic. I couldn't hear what he was saying. I'm like, oh, no.
You know, I kept wondering, who the hell is Skyping me? And then I checked in with you. And to be honest, I don't remember doing that. I thought it was quiet as hell.
He's talking, and I hear...
I'll have to listen to the...
I don't know if I can duplicate it. When he's talking, I hear... I'm like, Scott, stop breathing. I mean, you could hear him, but I know. And I wonder if it's just like, because you've never, well, sometimes when you talk for a long time to someone, like you're asking them a question, sometimes you'll let air out of your nose because you're like guessing. Yeah, that I've heard. But this time you weren't even talking. Also, I'm just hearing you going, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Man. I thought you were snorting coke or something.
Oh, my secret's out.